Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm your host, one of your hosts for this episode of The Thing About Cars. Around the table today, we have a full house. Becca, are you there?
I'm here.
Dawn?
I'm here.
And Ben?
Yes, I'm here.
And special guest today, David Pauly. David, are you with us?
I am here.
And I keep saying David. Would you prefer Dave?
You know, David, David usually means I'm in trouble. And actually, my experience is the closer that it gets to a single syllable word, the more trouble I'm in. But my mothers and sisters said it as David. Life was over.
Wait, so you didn't get the middle name?
Yeah, my middle name is Marvin. I tried to, you know, try to keep that out of context as much as possible.
Because when my kids are in trouble, they get the whole entire name and they just get this look like,
that's so funny.
That's more names you get yelled out, the more trouble you're in.
You know, Becca, I'm the youngest of five kids. If they got the name right, it was, you know, I called it a win.
I completely get that one.
That's fantastic. So Dave and I met when doing a couple of nonprofit Snapcast episodes, and we've got one more, I think, coming up in a few weeks here. But I discovered that Dave is something of a car guy. What's in your garage now, Dave?
Right. Well, actually, in my garage is like the hard top off of my 2008 Jeep Wrangler, because nothing else fits in there. I've told Vicky that my Jeep is the latest in a long line of midlife crisis cars.
Nice.
Well, he might enjoy, or sorry, Dave, you might enjoy some of my Jeep stories then.
Yes, Becca's got Jeep woes out the wazoo at the moment, I think. But
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's more the explanation of the Jeep, really, that I had in mind. You have the Wrangler, and I was looking at the Unlimited, the four-door, and I really couldn't even afford a regular, let alone the Rubicon that I was drooling all over. So I got a Liberty. And I had always grown up calling Jeep Wrangler type Jeeps a Jeep Jeep. That way, you know, differentiated from all the other Jeep things out there. And so I couldn't afford my Wrangler. I got a Liberty, which, you know, the guts of are pretty much the same, and it's 4x4 and all that, but, you know, the outside. So my license plate says Jeep-ish, because I can't be a Jeep-Jeep, so I'm Jeep-ish.
So, yeah, Dave put one question on the table, or at least one topic on the table already, and I think this is something we've touched on in a past episode, but I wanted to hear Dave's take on this. Was the thought is that the new Ford Bronco is gunning to replace the Wrangler.
All over that. I have so many remarks on that, Dave, if you want to talk about that.
You know what? I am in one sense, I'm lusting after it. In the other sense, I'm feeling oddly threatened.
It is gung-ho aiming for Jeep Wrangler. It is all over aiming for that. And exactly right.
Wait, oddly threatened?
Well, you know, Bronco came out in like 1965, and they like ran until 96. And if I also came out in 1965, and so for most of my life, the Bronco was kind of just like a misnomer thing. It was not really the SUV that it started out to be. It was not really I was reading this article on CNBC where it actually it became kind of the basis of the Ford Escape. It was like a pale imitation. The only thing that it had going for it over the Wrangler was it did much, much better on highway. And so the Wrangler in my mind is the car I should have bought when I was 24 years old. And when I finally did break down and got one, I'm like, okay, I have arrived. I'm in my 40s now, but I'm the guy I thought I was going to be at 24. And it's like the new Bronco. It's like they interviewed every Jeep owner and said, tell me what you don't like about your Wrangler. And then they fixed it. And I keep looking at it and I'm like, oh, is this going to, all of a sudden, am I going to no longer be the cool kid?
Right.
Well, no, there's more to Jeep, and everybody, every car is going to have its issues, even if they come along and fix things. when there's still that stigma, I guess, attached with Ford or even any American product nowadays, a lot of people are like, oh, it's all about imports, what have you. So every car, there's going to be either something against it or in the case of Jeep and even Bronco, there's cultures that are diehard for it. And you really just can't take that away.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as far as better on the highway, they're both kind of flying bricks. So then I think you're down to tires, which is not even the car itself.
Right.
You know, all the road noise, if you've got good off-road tires or not. But, you know.
Just to move the show forward here for a second, we could sit here and just hobnob around Jeeps all day, but
yeah, I know that's the problem. I'm trying to stifle myself. So
interrupt then and move to a moment of Grand Trivia Auto, and I'll do the question for this episode. I think Ben's got something in mind for another episode, right?
Yep.
Okay, so I'll do this one. The question is very simply: what was the first monster truck? Was it Gravedigger, Mad Dog, Bigfoot, or King Crunch? Those names again. That was the first monster truck: King Crunch, Bigfoot, Mad Dog, or Grave Digger? We'll answer that question at the end of the program here. And then moving on with our agenda, now that I've rudely interrupted everybody, I have an interesting thing for Ben. I think this is his thing. These are questions from what I think is a UK driving test.
Oh boy!
If folks know the answer, answers here. Just go ahead and chime in on some of these. I'm not going to ask all these questions. There's probably 20 questions here on the page. But the thing that caught my eye was in this UK driving test. At night, you see a pedestrian wearing reflective clothing and carrying a bright red light. What does that mean?
Oh goodness! I could think of a fairly rude answer, but I'll restrain myself.
Right. So I'll make up some choices here, and I'll include the correct one. Does it mean you're about to approach a construction zone? Does it mean you're watching just a guy walking along the side of the road? Does it mean you're approaching an organized walk? Or does it mean you're about to have an accident because you fell asleep at the wheel?
Does it mean you're entering the red light zone?
No.
Or, the red light district would have made more sense. Sorry.
That's Amsterdam.
I think I know the answer to this, but Ben, go ahead.
No, go ahead. If you've got it, go for it, Don.
You're approaching an organized walk.
That is correct.
Yes. It helps when you've lived in Europe for 7 years, and right. Volks marching and walking are huge things for our European brethren.
Right.
So.
Wait, Volks marching? What?
Volks marching. Volks marching.
Right.
People walk, it just means people walking.
That's right.
Well, yeah, I figured it. Just a funny word.
Oh, so they're real events, and they hand out little doodads you can stick on your walking stick to show all the ones you've been to.
Right.
Yep.
Here's another question from the same set. Where is the safest place to park your vehicle at night?
Another country.
In what place?
Right. The answer is simply in a garage.
Yeah.
As opposed to on the street or in a high density parking lot or something.
But if we're talking about in England, not everybody.
Right.
Not a lot of garages. There's a lot of street parking.
So these are, and I'll ask two more, maybe a third, but these two more. These are questions that apparently appear on a UK driving test. And then one of the next ones is: you are waiting to emerge at a junction. Your view is restricted by parked vehicles. What can help you to see traffic on the road that you're joining? And the answer is simply using reflections of traffic in shop windows. I have never seen anything like that on a Georgia test at all.
No, right. And I use stuff like that. I look around and look through, but I haven't even seen that much common sense in most drivers.
Right.
But again, remember the roads when you're talking about these little villages are tiny, mm-hmm. and everybody's parked everywhere. I mean, imagine Italy is just as bad. The question on their driver test should be, is there a lane? The sidewalk, does the sidewalk count as a lane?
Dave, where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Georgia?
No, I grew up in Ohio.
And do you remember about getting credentialed to drive in Ohio versus anywhere else?
Oh, yes, vividly. Having failed my driver's test 3 times, it's burned in there.
Wow. So would you say the Ohio test is different from the other places?
At least it was back then, because we didn't have to parallel park. We had this weird maneuverability test that you had to pass. And in my defense, when I failed the one test, it was because somebody ran into my maneuverability course, and rather than hit them, I hit the cone.
Hey, that should have given you bonus points. Come on.
You know, I argued that. I'm like, I'm sorry, I took out the cone and instead of the pedestrian. And he said, well, you know, for all you know, the cone could have been a pedestrian.
Right.
Oh, like, man.
The orange cone could have also been a psychedelic witch embedded in the asphalt, but it wasn't.
Right. All right, so I've got one more test question from this UK test, and then I'm going to ask you questions from the Georgia DMV test just out of comparison here. And so here's one question, which is, an adult casualty is not breathing. To maintain circulation, compression should be given. What is the correct depth to press? And I don't care about the answer, at least not for the purposes of our program. The answer is 4 to 5 centimeters. It's CPR, right?
This is on the DMV.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's my point. That question, which is a first aid / CPR related / you know, life preserving measure, is part of their driving test.
Well, every car in Europe comes with an emergency medical kit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But the deal is, when you're driving the Autobahn or any, you know, long highway in Europe, and you're going 110, 120 miles an hour, when you crash, unless you are in the a tank, you're dead.
Yeah.
You don't apply first aid. Yeah.
You're so resuscitating, you're dead.
Having worked in Europe a lot over the course of my career, that is a unique aspect of just European sensibility. We just need to expect casualties. Yeah. No matter what we're going to do, operating an elevator, operating a blender, expect something fatal is going to happen and let's prepare for it.
Exactly.
And most of us do drive more at, you know, lower speed on smaller roads than fast on the highway.
Well, and I know that scouting has become sort of controversial for many different reasons lately, none of which I really think are deserved, but that's a topic for another show. Scouting at its base element is simply about being prepared, right? Right. And so to Dave's point, it's like, what's wrong with just being prepared for that impending casualty?
And right. Europeans are prepared for everything.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, so we got 15 questions here that are the Georgia DMD test, the one that was given in 2020. We're going to rapid fire these if we can.
Are we allowed to, or should we even mention how long it's been since we've taken the Georgia DMD?
Never in my case.
I was going to say, I never took it. I just moved here from Europe and got a license.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. Mickey, you're considered from here, right? Because you've been here a while.
Yeah, I took the test. I can't remember the year. Well, actually, I can remember the year it was.
I can't remember the year.
I did not actually get my driver's license until I was well into my 17th year of age. I wasn't one of those people that got the learner's at 15 and then a driver's license at 16. I actually, sometime mid-year 16, I got my learner's, and sometime mid-year 17, I got my actual license.
Okay, so, but you and I are, that's what I was trying to establish, you and I are the only ones that were here long enough that we started out Georgia drivers.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So here we go, 15 questions. Number one, water on the road can cause a vehicle to hydroplane. Your car may hydroplane at speeds as low as, and then the choices are A, B, C, 45, 35, or 40 miles an hour. The answer, of course, is 35 miles an hour.
I would say even lower if you've got older cars.
Yeah.
Number two, what is the proper way to enter an expressway from the entrance ramp? A, go down the ramp and cross over to the traffic lane as soon as possible. B, use the acceleration lane to blend into traffic. C, go down to the bottom of the ramp and stop until it's safe to enter the expressway.
God, it's B, but I've seen so many people do A and C.
Yeah.
It's almost like C is mandatory at the Piedmont Road entrance to Bishop Highway.
Somebody did that coming off of Mount Perrin the other day, and he outweighed me, and I still wanted to run into it.
Right.
It's like, go!
Number three. If, while driving, a tire suddenly blows out, you should A, grip the steering wheel firmly, slow down, and exit from the traffic lanes. B, pump the brakes rapidly. C, brake hard and steer towards the right edge of the roadway.
A.
Yes, it's A.
Yeah. A, definitely. Yes.
You do not hit those brakes. You don't hit the gas. You take your feet off all pedals, hold on tight, and try to get it over.
Number four, the maximum speed limit on rural interstate highway is 60,
rural interstate. Okay.
Rural interstate highway is 60 miles an hour, 70 or 55.
55.
It's actually 70.
70.
Wait. Did I get my rural and?
No.
Maybe I got my areas mixed up.
Well, according to this thing, it's 70. We'll have to fact check that one.
Yeah, rural is when you're outside of, you know, populated areas, your countryside.
Okay, then I had a brain fart. I was thinking ITP, not way OTP, which is in the perimeter and out the perimeter.
Well, and the trick here is interstate. The trick is interstate highway. We think of highways and interstates as not being the same things.
You're right. So, yeah.
But how in the world do you get from here to Savannah on 16 without going 70 miles an hour? It's the longest road in the entire world.
Yeah, but you've got to go at least 90 to make the road interesting.
I've always said that those numbers are just suggestions.
Yeah.
16 between Macon and Savannah, you're right, it's long, boring, dull, and I swear every time I drive it, they've added 30 extra miles. So you've got to go that fast.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Yeah. What they need to do is put something down the middle of the road to just hook your car on. And the slow people can do that, and the rest of us can go, like, bad out of heck.
Yeah.
Have you ever been on 35 through Iowa or 70 through Kansas or...
You can list some in Michigan that look exactly like Iowa and Kansas.
Right. And there are some parts of the I-5 in California that are so mind-suckingly boring.
Yeah. All right,
70, I was driving across Kansas on 70 one time, and I fell asleep and woke up 5.5 hours later. Yeah. And I started to drift.
Oh, man. Wow. All right. Number 5, you are driving behind a motorcycle and you want to pass. You must stay in the right lane as much as possible because the motorcycle is small and doesn't use all of the lane. B, blow your horn to make the motorcycle move onto the shoulder so you can pass.
My God.
Have your vehicle entirely enter the left lane before and during the pass.
C.
Yeah.
Number 6.
Everything on the road must be considered as an individual vehicle, regardless of how much room it takes up. Yep.
Number 6. If you are involved in an accident, one of the immediate requirements is to A, render aid to the injured, B, notify your insurance agent, or C, notify the Secretary of State's office.
Oh my God. I so want to give a smart ass answer to this.
Well, it's a question that sort of boggles my mind, right?
Why, like, Secretary of State?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Why wasn't the police listed for more realism and to stump the idiot people?
Well, there's another recent topic too. We'll talk about that when we're done with the test. You know, police in Georgia are now no longer being required to respond to accidents and injuries at hand.
Yes, so, I have noticed that. Not that they're awesome at showing up anyhow.
Number 6, if you are involved in an accident, one of the immediate requirements is to... Well, I just did that one. Sorry.
Yes.
Number 7, the Georgia implied consent law means that A, you must sign a statement that you will not drive a motor vehicle after drinking more than 3 drinks. B, you agree to be tested for the amount of alcohol in your blood if you are arrested for drunk or impaired driving. Or C, you consent to have a blood sample taken if an officer stops you for driving recklessly.
A.
It's B.
I was leaning towards B, but I almost feel like there's more to it, because you don't have to be arrested. If you have a driver's license, you consent to being tested for alcohol without being charged with anything.
Is that right?
So that's where I felt like I was, you know, there were some hairs being split. Because you will be arrested if you do not.
But it all comes down to, do you have a good lawyer in your back pocket?
Which lawyers suck right now. Ask me how I know.
Number 8. Before we go there, number 8. Streets and highways are most slippery, A, when it has been raining hard for several hours, B, when they are clean and dry, or C, just after it starts to rain.
C.
Yep.
C.
Number 9.
Should we explain this for people that don't know, though?
Oh, yeah, I think you should, yeah.
Because, I mean, there's oil that's left on the road everywhere you go. Cars sputter and spit, and even little bits, the amount of cars that are on the road. And that, when it first starts raining, is when all that stuff is coming up on the surface. If it's raining hard, it's been washing the surface oil away, at least.
Right. Well, it's also because when it's just barely raining, the
it's
amount
sitting
of oil
there.
Is probably more than the amount of rain, which is making it like oil and water. They don't mix.
Right.
That's right. All right. Number 9, the proper way in which to make a right turn is slow down and get into the lane nearest the center line. That's A. B, signal and get into the lane nearest the right curb. C, approach the corner in the lane nearest the right curb, but move over toward the middle of the street before turning? The answer, of course, is B. But there are people who like to swing wide on their right turns and their left turns, and it just kills me. It's like there's no reason to swing wide on any turn unless you're driving like a semi.
Well, my concern was – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, sorry, Becky. The whole time you're reading that, I'm thinking every one of these behaviors is manifested every single day on West Pace's Ferry Road through Buckhead.
Yep.
And the thing with West Pace's Ferry is also the behaviors are manifested at like 15 miles an hour. Because I am convinced there is a network of old men that are notified the minute I turn onto West Pace's Ferry Road, and they all get on a block at a time, driving 15 miles an hour in the middle, turning wide, and the question almost does not reflect real life in Atlanta.
No, exactly. No, in fact, I got a notice about that alert. It's called the Dave is driving alert. Get on your car right now.
Right. Oh, that's what that weird text is that my dad keeps getting.
Right, exactly.
Well, see, my concern about B was with the use of the word curb, how many people were making use of, you know, like the sidewalk to make turns. I mean, it's a joke, but it's not.
If you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk. All right, so we got five questions to go, and then we'll move on here. So let's just to quickly round out the Georgia DMV test. Number 10, you may pass on the right of another vehicle when... A, both answers, which is a weird place to put both answers, but A, both answers. B, when traveling on a multi-lane highway carrying two or more lanes of traffic in the same direction, or C, when the other vehicle is making or about to make a left turn when a lane is provided to pass on the right.
C. And
the answer is, the answer is, of course, A, both answers. You can pass a car on the right on a multi-lane highway when everybody's moving in the same direction, or if there's a legal lane passed on the
Change in the law since I've done it.
We're then. Talking passing on the right, right? So
you were never supposed to pass on the right before.
That's right, yeah.
You were restricted to passing on the left, which is why we would all get so very angry at people blocking up the left lane and forcing us to pass on the right. That was considered illegal.
Well, passing on the right is still comparatively hazardous, so people should not think it's now all of a sudden okay to do it. But it is at least legal to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Number 11. When driving behind another vehicle at night, you should A, keep your headlights on low beam, B, use your high beam headlights until you are within 10 feet of the vehicle ahead, or C, just use your high beam headlights whenever.
Atlanta, all the Atlanta drivers answered C.
Right. The answer, of course, is A, just use your low beams, but yes. Number 12.
But you can get closer now. It used to be further away than 10. What was it, 10 that was in your question?
Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, if someone's behind me at 10 feet and using their high beams, I'm just going to slow down.
At least.
Number 10, a solid yellow line on your side of the center line means A, reduced speed, B, traffic light ahead, or C, do not pass.
Do not pass.
Or do not cross. It's supposed to be do not cross the line if it's solid.
Right.
Number 13, if you have to stop on the shoulder of a freeway because of an emergency, you should A, raise the hood to indicate trouble and wait in your car for help. B, stand behind your car to warn traffic that you have stopped, or C, get out of your car and walk for help.
I'm thinking at this point, just get on the gurney.
sorry, I can't stop laughing.
That's true. It's true. I mean, obviously, raise the hood, stay in your car and wait for help. And don't stand behind your car because that's a good way to get sandwiched.
For the love of God, do not stand behind your car around there.
And again, I will say all European cars come with a red triangle.
Yes.
And flares and even something that you put in your back window that says, help me, I've fallen and I can't get up.
I'm stalled and I can't get started. But I also have to ask, it says freeway in a question for the state of Georgia.
Right, exactly.
A freeway.
Right.
In Georgia.
All right. Number 14, you have allowed the wheels of your vehicle to run off the edge of the pavement. You should A.
Jerk the wheel to the left suddenly. You
should A, release the gas pedal and turn the front wheel slightly to the left to edge the car back on the pavement. B, hold the steering wheel firmly, release the gas pedal and gently apply the brakes. Return to the pavement when the vehicle is slowed enough to allow roll steer back onto the highway safely. Or C, apply the brakes and turn the front wheels sharply to the left.
and roll your car
right. The answer is B, hold the steering wheel firmly, release the gas pedal and And when you've slowed down enough to allow rolls to go back onto the highway, that's how you do it.
Number Depending on the car, it's not always roll your car. Sometimes there's this thing called overcorrection where you violently shoot wildly three lanes to the left.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking those answers were really free of the word careen.
Oh my.
Number 15, it is more dangerous to drive at night than in the daytime because A, you cannot see as far ahead at night, B, the road is probably more slippery at night, or C, your reaction time is simply slower at night.
A.
Not so much I've been drinking.
Right. Ooh. Ooh.
I didn't mean
drinking
that.
Drinking is honestly, not just for darkness anymore.
I didn't mean that. Honestly, yeah.
Begin that sentence with hypothetically, though.
Right. Well, you know, even if it's 3 a.m. here, it's still 5 o'clock somewhere, right?
That's so, right.
Exactly.
All right. Where do we go from here? Dave has another question I think we ought to tackle real quick before we end the program. And Dave, you want to ask this question or shall I ask it?
You go ahead and ask it because I think it requires more context and I'll just get defensive.
Uh-oh.
All right. So the question is, when the hell is someone going to make an EV convertible?
Yeah, you know? acknowledging the Tesla Model 3 is out there, but it's first of all, it's not super super affordable, and second of all, I don't like the way it looks. It's kind of like it's basically a sedan with a drop roof.
Right.
Well, is the problem that the wind drag on the convertible is too strong for it? Sorry.
It's a good question because I honestly don't know. It's so many of the EVs. I'm an engineer. I'm fascinated by this technology. I'm fascinated by the environmental impact of it. However, I live in Virginia Highland where it's mandatory. Everybody has to have a Nissan Leaf and they're just not that fun to drive.
Right.
I think there are two big stumbling blocks. One is from an engineering standpoint, I think there might be some concern about the amount of power drawn by the top raising and lowering system, since a manual top is strictly forbidden these days. Nobody's going to buy one. Nobody knows what a manual top is anymore. Nobody has the inkling to pull that sucker up or down. The market is dictating us to have push button electric tops on the few cars.
Then they need to meet a Jeep sometime where you have to rig something.
Okay, thank you, Budinski. Anyway, but you're running on a battery, so everything you do is going to consume power. And mm-hmm. right now, our electric vehicles are not bottomless wells of electrical power on reserve. But the other big thing, I think, is the market isn't ready for it yet, because look at what's being offered as EVs. They're mostly pretty practical things. I mean, yeah, Teslas go fast, but they still have, plenty of interior space for people and your stuff. What's a Nissan Leaf? It's like a little wagon hatchback kind of thing.
Well, stop bringing the Leaf up, first of all. It needs to stop being an example of anything. And I'm going to say something that I'm never going to say again. So go ahead and let me do it. As far as the EVs go and the Teslas are pretty sexy looking. So I don't think you can really say that it's more of a practical vehicle and they wouldn't want the convertible because it's a good looking car. So I think it's got more going for it. The Leaf is,
I don't think the sporty and recreational crowd are really interested in electric yet. Not enough for the companies to take note and go, oh, let's do this.
Which is fascinating because the first electric car was a convertible. In 1900 by Porsche.
Yeah, but the idea wasn't to drop the top on a nice day. The idea was back then, and almost every car had an openable top because they were still basically glorified horse carriages.
True, but still a bit of trivia.
Also, though, there is another Tesla Roadster in the works. It's on the way.
Yes.
Well, I think that the sporty crowd is catching up to the electronic world.
They are.
Porsche has some amazing stuff planned. But to Dave's point, though, I mean, he's right. It would be nice to have a convertible option. We're boasting cars now that have like a 300-mile range. I think they can spare a few amps to put up or down the top.
Well, at that point, yeah, you just don't drop the top when you want the efficiency and the full range of mileage. But when you're doing city or something and you're just trying to get around and have a good day, drop the top and you can recharge later.
Or my convertible decides it sometimes it doesn't want to drop the top. Sometimes it wants to stay halfway up and halfway down. It's, you know, convertibles have a mind of their own, and it really suits the owner to decide if that convertible is coming out or not that day, depending on how persnickety it is.
That's right. Why I wish the manual top was still around, because you didn't have to worry about the power source not wanting to cooperate.
Right.
Or something getting stuck.
Yeah, one of the first midlife crisis cars I had was the last year that they made the Mercury Capri, where you still had the manual top that you had to lift a boot to drop into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not that much work to put down. On the other hand, when like you drive into a torrential rainstorm on the highway and there's no overpass to hide underneath, putting it up and getting it hooked underneath and dealing with the boot, bit of a hassle.
Yeah.
So Dave, I'm wondering how many midlife cars have you had, because that might be a fascinating topic.
Oh, I think I 5 of them directly. I started having midlife crisis cars about the time I was 26. The car I bought right out of college was a Ford Tempo, which was not a midlife crisis car. Being a young single man, there's a certain image component that you're trying to cultivate that does not go along with owning a Tempo.
Well, unless you really like cruising for hot elderly women.
Yes.
Come on, man. There's a part of me that totally agrees with what you're saying, and Becca, I hear it. But you know, what's wrong with being sensible? And I'm laughing as I say it.
Sensible is totally fine when you like going home and making your freezer dinner for one. And
what's wrong with freezer dinners?
They were much better in the 80s.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Peel back foil to expose tater tots.
You know, I have never done the freezer dinner, to tell you the truth. But
when my parents were at the end of their life and I was cleaning out their house, I told my siblings, I've seen how all 5 of us are going to go out. Alone and insane in a house full of Schwann's frozen pot pies.
Hey, those were delicious. My husband worked for Schwann's for 7 years.
Oh, they are delicious. That's because they're like 70% fat.
Right. That's exactly right.
They're southern pot pies. Okay, you know what? How much time do we have left?
We've got about 10 more minutes and we still have to wrap trivia.
Okay, but I kind of want to circle back to a little bit on the Jeep from the beginning, though. Because I don't know how many of all of us have really looked at the new Bronco and the new options. And part of Dave's point with how Bronco is really gunning for the Jeep. Because when the Jeep first started out, when the Bronco first started out, way back when, it really looked like a Jeep. All the parts came off and everything. Mm-hmm. And then that really became Jeep's niche, and Bronco had more of just this tonneau that came off, and it was on top of a Ranger platform, and you would take this tonneau off and it would open up to look like a pickup truck, but then the back area behind the driver and passenger were missing, and it was fun, but you know, you still had the roof over the driver area and all that. They're returning to their roots plus some now. Not only can you remove the area over what I'll just call the pickup bed area, you can remove the roof over the driver's area, you can remove the doors now, you can have 2-door, 4-door, and if you don't hear Jeep written all over every bit of that, because they've got their 4-door Jeep now, the 2-door, that is pretty much all the options Jeep has as well. But this is the thing that I cracked up over. All the little options and packages and things that Ford is offering on the Bronco, one of them is called the Sasquatch package. Think about this. If anybody does not recall the Bigfoot package on the Jeep, So now think there's the Bigfoot on the Jeep and a Sasquatch on the Ford. That to me screamed with bells, whistles, bright red flashing lights. We're gunning for Jeep because they're just using different names for the same.
Yeah. Well, it's even, you know, what does a Wrangler do? Wranglers go out and wrangle Broncos.
Yep. That's right. That's exactly right.
And I think, Becca, one of the things to your point, so where I said earlier, they like talked to Jeep drivers and said, what are your points of pain? Taking the doors off your Jeep, it's so much fun driving a Jeep without doors on them. The mirrors come off with them. So either you got to go get an extra set of mirrors that fit in or not, or, you know, it's like, you know, you just careen around and say, you know, I don't care what the driver's test says. I don't need to worry what's behind me. whereas in the Bronco, they're like, okay, you can take the doors off, but the mirrors stay. One less accessory you got to buy.
Right.
Yeah, I see that.
Oh, I've said it before and I've said it again. If I ever end up with, you know, enough of an income, I think I'm going to have to take a very, very close look at the Bronco.
And are we seeing it just as a two? Oh, no, it does have a four-door model.
Yes, there's two-door, there's four-door, there's remove the back, there's remove the by the driver, there's remove everywhere. I'm sorry, you know, I love older cars, but it's pretty. but the new Jeep is pretty too. I mean, I'm not downplaying either by saying pretty. It's not something I say a lot. You know, it's they're both gorgeous vehicles and it is very difficult and they're both wildly out of my price range when they're brand new anyhow.
Exactly. So let's wrap the episode with the answer to our grand trivia auto question. The question was, what was the first monster truck? And our choices were Gravedigger, Mad Dog, Bigfoot, or King Crunch. Dave, you're our guest. You have a guess you want to make first?
I do. It was Bigfoot.
It was Bigfoot? Why do you say it's Bigfoot? Do you have a...
Because I'm old enough to remember the launch of the monster truck rallies in the early 70s. You know, there's not a hell of a lot else to do in Dayton, Ohio in the winter.
That's
it's
funny.
It's Sunday, down at the Thunderdome.
Right. Don, what about you? Do you agree? Do you have a different guess, Don?
Well, having that my family grew up in Pittsburgh and I'm only a year younger than Dave, it is Bigfoot. I remember that. I went to those truck rallies.
Yep. Becca, what do you think?
I would like to go ahead and preface this with, I'm not as old as other people, so I would really like to get this wrong just to make it look like I'm younger than everybody else.
Yes, Sasquatch.
I was so... Sasquatch wasn't an option. He'll yell at me. I was going to go ahead and say Bigfoot. Geez, maybe I should just say... Okay, I know where I'm going to say... Bigfoot.
You got to follow your heart, Becca. You got to do the logic thing. If your brain says Bigfoot, you got to do what's in your mind. So, Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going with Bigfoot, too. I've read some of the history of this truck. And if I may add, your ticket buys the entire seat, but you'll only need the edge.
That's awesome.
Every monster truck event radio ad, right?
Yeah.
Yes, true. And that's why when I do the Sunday thing around my kids, I have to pull up a video on YouTube to show them why I'm going Sunday.
Right. So the answer is, of course, Bigfoot. I mean, everybody got it right, but the date here is what confuses me because Dave says he saw it in the late 70s, but the research I did says that in April of 1981. Bob Chandler drove over junked cars in Bigfoot in what is often believed to be the first monster truck to crush cars, and he actually used a Ford vehicle as its base. So Bigfoot is the correct answer, but the date maybe needs a little bit more tweaking.
The truck goes back farther than the events. The truck was originally cooked up by a 4x4 shop that was you know, just trying to promote their shop, and they did funny little films of it driving over cars out in a farm field or something.
Right.
Yeah, but if you were in rural Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, where we lived in the late 70s, I mean, these were all the rage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys ever been to a monster truck rally?
Yep.
I have not.
They are the noisiest things on the planet. And bear in mind, I spent 20 years working at the airport.
I've been to one. You definitely needed ear protection. It was indoors at what was Phillips Arena.
Right. Yeah, but that's where I was at one. And to Don's comment, here in the South, everybody had a pickup truck with big old wheels on it. So, sure.
Well, here's the weird observation I made is once you were inside and watching these vehicles in operation, it was, I mean, sure, never mind the whole car crushing combat, you know, arena combat element of the show, but the stunts that they were doing were oddly graceful in these huge and heavy machines that made a ton of noise. You know, I mean,
oh yeah,
they're bouncing around on their two back wheels, they're pirouetting, they're spinning, and I'm like, this is like a gigantic redneck iron ballet, is what it is. And
I love it.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of fun.
Well, and it went along with the whole Evel Knievel, everything that was, you know, really sexy and hot back then in the 70s with the cheesy mustaches and.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So
I'm pausing on the sexy and hot. I'm sorry. I'm just going to stutter at that one.
on that note, we're going to wrap the episode. As always, thank you for joining us with The Thing About Cars. We hope you and yours are all safe out there. We'll see you with another episode in about a week. Take care.
Bye.
Hey. Bye. Bye.
Sexy and hot, just saying.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.